Today's show is brought to you by Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. It will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, or sweatpants that you will ever wear. And listeners of this pod know that we are all about Mack Weldon. They are our number one sponsor. And Ben, how are you feeling?
Well, I usually think I know everything there is to know about Mack Weldon, how they're antimicrobial, so they're, you know, super clean and safe, how you can wear them for any occasion, whether you're at a very nice dinner or just hanging out outside chasing butterflies and lizards at your local wetlands. But I did not know this, Andrew. Did you know that they have a policy where if you don't like the first pair, you can just keep it and they'll still give you a refund? I've never even heard of anything like that from a company. That's unbelievable customer protection. So you really have no excuse if you're out there listening to this. Try some Mack Weldon's. Join the club.
Yeah, you can't say no to an offer like that. Check out Mack Weldon. Get down to your local wetlands. And if you go to MackWeldon.com right now, you can get 20% off using the promo code OPEN. So that's MackWeldon.com, and the promo code is OPEN, and you should really check it out. We are big believers.
It's not just sweatpants. They got sweaters, merino sweaters. They got underwear. They got undershirts. They got everything you could possibly need to be a modern gentleman. MackWeldon.com, promo code OPEN. MackWeldon.com, promo code OPEN.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. Another classic episode of Warriors smack lesser Western Conference team and steal their soul last night. The Thunder starting to get kind of Clipperish vibes, right?
It really is. It's those games are starting to get pretty uncomfortable. But it's different. Like, the Warriors sort of came back to life last night. Like, it was fun to watch. It felt like the old Steph Curry, which, I mean, like, as recently as 6 days ago, everybody was watching them like, what the hell is going on? And that was MVP Steph last night.
Yeah, I mean, last week on the podcast, Captain Accountability, yours truly, expressed my serious concerns about where Golden State was kind of headed, how they were going to piece this together. And I very intelligently and shrewdly left myself a wide open escape hatch, which was, well, the answer is Steph. If they get Steph back, they're going to be fine. And I think what we saw, not only, you know, max effectiveness, Steph Curry, but max swagger, max confidence, Steph Curry. And that's been gone too a little bit, right? I mean, part of him taking the backseat this year, not being quite the same guy, is that he's had trouble sustaining that within the course of a game, you know, within the course of multiple games or over the course of a stretch of the season. And that's finally back. And I think that's really the difference. I mean, that's when they go from this team that is very scary to just lights out. And I thought that game against the Thunder on Monday night, I mean, wasn't that game over, you know, very, very quickly? I mean, you knew where it was going almost right off the top.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, it's getting kind of Clipperish with the Thunder. Like, it's not just that they are not good enough, but they also, like, the Warriors are the worst possible matchup for OKC. So the Thunder, it's almost secondary. Like, even the Westbrook stuff is sort of a secondary thing for me coming out of that game. But it really is, like, Steph was that dude last night, and he just hasn't been on that level for most of the year. And I'm happy for him. Like, it makes me happy because I think my biggest worry, and I wrote about this in a column on SI today, but my biggest worry with the KD thing was that it would sort of undercut Steph this year, in a year where, like, I think if Durant had not gone to Golden State, the entire season would have been about Steph Curry sort of answering critics and the 3-1 jokes and his response. And we haven't really gotten a chance to see him, like, spread his wings and exert himself. But now I think we're starting to see it. And I think the biggest issue is that for the Warriors to do anything seriously, like, he has to be that guy, because he really does just put them in a whole different category.
Yeah, Steph's in a fascinating place. Okay, I don't know if you saw this tweet I put up with the cumulative plus minus of the star players over these last 4 years,
because Steph's on track here. I did see that.
So he's on track to lead the NBA in raw plus minus for the third time in 4 years. In that fourth year, he finished second to Draymond, and it was very close. it's insane how he's lapped everybody, whether it's Chris Paul, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden. I mean, he is completely on his own plane. So if you're just looking at like who is having the biggest impact during this most recent time of the NBA, this recent era, it's Steph by a mile. And yet at the same time, there's plenty of ammunition for people who want to kind of tear down his legacy. You know, he didn't win Finals MVP. His injury issues, you know, significantly cost him in last year's finals. This year, you know, they go out and recruit Kevin Durant, so it's almost not his team anymore. And so even though this guy should be almost above reproach or above criticism in terms of his impact, especially when you're looking at his efficiency numbers, his three-point shooting numbers, how good their offense has been with him as the number one guy, just right down the list, even the progress he's made on defense,
yeah,
his legacy is still very much in the balance, right? I mean, this is a very, you know, defining season for him. And that was one of my concerns, was we didn't see him really answer the bell last year during the finals. Like when push came to shove, LeBron steamrolled them. I didn't want this to be a situation where Kevin Durant goes down and for whatever reason, Steph can't answer that bell. And I think what we've seen, like you said, these last couple games is a big time answer. And I think we're also, you know, back to a point where, you know, I saw LeBron in person on Sunday night. It was fantastic. I mean, Cleveland's big three scored 100-plus points. LeBron had a brilliant behind-the-back move in transition to just completely lose Julius Randle. I mean, it was off the charts from an entertainment value perspective. But Steph doing Steph against the Thunder is on an even higher level than that. I mean, he really is the best show when he's got it going. And it seems like it's been a while since we've seen that.
Yeah, I mean, like, and the skepticism is fair to a point, like especially this year, he just hasn't been himself for a large chunk of the season. And like we said last week, like he was missing open shots and you were just like, what's going on here? But I also feel like even over the past few years, when he really has been just the best player in basketball, there's been this weird backlash with everything he's done. And it's kind of bullshit, man. Like as a player, people talk about him like he was Steve Nash winning the MVP, and it was just sort of like a fluke, and it was just like the perfect time. And that's he's on a whole different level than Nash, for me anyways. And like I've started to see it as I think through the draft. Like you look at somebody like Malik Monk, like you think about his skills, and you can almost say he's got Steph Curry potential, but you kind of have to stop yourself because that's just an outrageous claim to make. Like who is ever going to turn into Steph Curry? Because he's just like that much better than anyone we've ever seen. And it just doesn't, it seems like when you go across the league, like he's just not appreciated on that level.
Yeah. And I think there are good circumstantial reasons for that, at least this season. I mean, I think anyone who wasn't appreciating him last year is just missing the story of the entire sport. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and he was the unanimous MVP. So he's definitely appreciated to a point. Yeah. But I think like, he doesn't command the respect that a guy like LeBron does, or even someone like Russ. Like, nobody's been making 3-1 jokes about Russ all year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look at Westbrook's comments about Steph saying, you know, who's he? You know, would he say that about LeBron, or would he say that about, you know, some other legends? I mean, I think there is still a sense within the league itself that maybe Steph doesn't have the respect factor among his fellow stars that he probably deserves, but that's why he takes it out on them, right? I mean, that was just an absolute thrashing.
That's what made last night so much fun, is like, this was Steph finally sort of unleashed.
Yeah, the dunk. I mean, the dunk and then the flex and just kind of like the walk. It's like, it's not really a natural look for Steph, but when he gets into that mode, you're reminded that he is capable of just kind of humbling and humiliating opponents. What do you think of the dust up? You know, when he's kind of shoving and then Westbrook kind of gets in there, and you know, Steph looked kind of silly in the middle of it, but that was an interesting look, didn't you think?
I loved it. And then the one thing about Steph is he never looks natural in those situations, but he also never really backs down. Like he's not afraid to sort of mix it up with people. He just happens to be like 30 pounds lighter than anyone he's mixing it up with. So it's always a little dangerous, but he's tougher than he looks.
I love the quiet competitors. I mean, him, Duncan, I mean, that is like, that's Captain Golliver. I mean, that's my squad. I would just have an entire team of those guys.
And can I just add one thing on Steph?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like off the court, people talk about him like he's Russell Wilson, and I've just never really gotten it. Like, Steph is a legitimately cool person, whereas Russell Wilson is like the corniest person on earth, but Steph's like genuinely funny. He can make fun of himself on the court. He talks all kinds of trash.
No, but it was over once they did the wedding photos, though. I mean, you saw the wedding photos.
That's a great counterpoint. The wedding photos are really tough to come back from.
I think that's what did it. I mean, whether or not he's cool, and I'm probably inclined to agree with you. Like that was a really tough loss. You know, unsalvageable.
I'm biased because I spent an hour with him at some event last year at All-Star Weekend, and most of it was off the record, but I came away being like, man, like Steph is actually awesome. Like this whole time I thought he was kind of a square, but he was like, he's not afraid to mix it up. I'll just say that.
Well, you know, the big story going into that game against the Thunder was how supposedly the Warriors were offended or you know, upset about the Thunder's treatment of Kevin Durant, which really didn't make a lot of sense because I think Sam Presti, as it kind of came out and was reported, Sam Presti had made some statements and, you know, expressed his gratitude for KD before that game. But I thought Steph handled that situation hilariously, like just like you would expect someone who's like pretty cool and has good things going on in their life to handle it. I mean, he just completely brushed it off and was kind of chuckling about, you know, what stories become stories. And, you know, to me, that just furthers your point, right? Like this is a guy who has some perspective, who's not so into being Steph Curry that he can't see the broader picture. And that is, you know, really unique about him. I mean, he hasn't kind of bought into himself the way that a lot of NBA superstars or even a lot of aspiring superstars, you know, I'm looking at you, Dion Waiters, kind of buy into their, you know, buy into their personas. That's not Steph.
My thing with Steph, and it's just a theory for all celebrities, is like the coolest celebrities are the people who actually get to grow up like without being famous. And Steph was like got to age 20 or 21 before he was so famous that he couldn't go anywhere without being recognized. Like he had as close to a normal upbringing as is possible for a basketball superstar. And when you compare that to like LeBron, who was famous at 13, like they're just, Steph is a more regular dude than someone like LeBron.
You're out here just taking shots at Mary-Kate and Ashley, just telling them that they're not.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. Like the child celebrities are always a little different.
All right. That's a good theory.
So what did you think of the comments in general? Because like the Warriors immediately downplayed it, but that stuff didn't come from nowhere. Like Chris Haynes got that from a source with the team, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a couple of guys on that squad who it's dangerous to attribute their feelings to the entire organization. And I think we know who I'm talking about. You know, Draymond, Iguodala. You know, there's a couple other guys within that locker room where, you know, depending on how you write it, if you say, oh, you know, one or two Warriors players was ABC, you know, about the Thunder, or the entire Warriors organization felt that way, it's difficult. And I think, you know, that's just something where it was a story everyone wanted to believe. So regardless of how legitimate those thoughts were or how many people shared those sentiments, everybody was just ready to hop onto it. I thought,
yeah,
in general, it was much ado about nothing. I think the Warriors look at the Thunder much like they look at the Clippers as little brother. You know, I feel like they have a confidence level, especially now that Durant is no longer in Oklahoma City, where they just kind of own that team. They know how to handle Westbrook. They're not concerned about him beating them. And they don't care too much about this other nonsense. Maybe Durant's feelings were hurt in terms of how his mother was treated during that game or how cold some of the fan treatment was towards him. But I can't imagine these guys are really sitting around their beautiful million-dollar condos in the Bay Area that bent out of shape over the Chesapeake Energy Arena. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't be. I mean, a lot of that was sports. Like that, it just is sort of a fact of life that if you leave one team, I was actually expecting much worse from the OKC fans when he went back there. So I was kind of caught off guard when they were still offended, and it echoed some of the sort of indignation that we've seen from Durant over the past like 9 months or so when people question his decision. Like it seems like he's sensitive, which is fine. And there's a chance that maybe the Warriors sort of like echoed that as a way to kind of appease him going into this summer and just want him to feel supported. But I'm with you. Like the whole thing, if the Warriors were serious, that's really lame. And I think it's probably, we're probably better off assuming that most of the Warriors don't feel that way and that this is kind of much ado about nothing.
Yeah, I'm giving them a pass on it, to be honest.
So, should we even talk about the Thunder? I mean, like, I think they're not nearly as bad as they looked last night. They've actually been playing pretty well lately. Westbrook has been distributing more so over the past few weeks than he had been like the month prior.
Well, here's one thought I had on the Thunder. And I had already been conceiving of like Golden State's worst case scenario as them falling to the two and then getting stuck in a first round matchup with Oklahoma City. Now I'm wondering, would they actually rather play the Thunder in the first round than to play a Blazers team that's coming on strong or to play a Memphis team that, you know, that's kind of in that same range? Because they're not only are they significantly better than the Thunder, but they know it, and the Thunder know it too. And it's that mental edge that reminds me of the Clippers, where the Clippers go into games against the Warriors, and it's just like, oh my God, like we're about to get steamrolled. And pretty early in that game, I thought the Thunder went to meltdown mode too, where it was just like, we expect Westbrook to have the answers. He doesn't have any answers because they know how to deal with him pretty well. And now we're just screwed, and this is going to get out of hand so quickly. And by the way, we're forgetting all of our three-point defense principles. So Steph's just wide open for shot after shot after shot. Now Klay's wide open, shot after shot after shot, and this game's over. You know what I mean? I wonder if you're Golden State, who would you rather play in the first round? The Thunder, the Grizzlies, or the Nuggets, I guess, if they're still in it, or the Blazers?
Well, real quick, I actually have a separate question related to something that you said. Like, you know defense. I'm not really a defense guy. You know defense better than me. What is it exactly that Golden State is doing defensively to Russ? Because they went away from it at the beginning of the Western Conference Finals last year, and I remember it was like kind of a story midway through that series that they had kind of abandoned their principles a little bit, and then they shifted back, and Russ just had no answers, and they've continued it all year where you can count on like a dreadful offensive game from Russell Westbrook in these games. So is there something specific?
I'm not sure it's that. I mean, the advantage that they have is they can put out lineups that have no weak links defensively, so that, you know, a lot of what Westbrook tries to do in the pick and roll is just like get your worst defensive player into that high screen and then just attack him and hope for the fouls and hope
just that bully him to the rim.
Yeah, exactly. And beat him to the rim. And that's really hard to do when it's Draymond as the big, and they have a lot of interchangeable guards. So, you know, they can crowd him. They have a lot of guys who have experience, you know, playing big defensive moments. They're not going to make stupid fouls. They're not going to give you cheap, ugly points. But I think more than anything, Golden State can really make him work on the other end too. I mean, there's no plays off for Westbrook. And what I thought you saw last night wasn't so much Westbrook's offensive struggles. It was his defensive struggles. I mean, he was losing Curry left and right. And you just can't afford those mental lapses. And that's where it starts to snowball, because you know, if you're Westbrook, you're not out there trying to trade threes with Golden State, right? Like, you're trying to control the game, control the pace, like get out in transition when you can. I mean, it's got to start on the defensive end. And when they're just raining in shots from everywhere and you're completely losing Curry in transition or in secondary transition, it almost doesn't matter what he's doing on offense. You're just not going to be able to keep up. So that's why it's a tough matchup for him. You know, if I was the Thunder, by far the team I would want to play in the first round, you know, the least, would be the Warriors. And I think we should answer that question, though. I mean, if you're Golden State, who do you want to play?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I would definitely, if I were Golden State, I'd be angling to get the Thunder, because I completely agree. Like, they've figured out a formula here. And OKC, this version of OKC's roster just does not have an answer. And as a basketball fan, I think we've all spent like 5 months keeping our fingers crossed that we could maybe get Russ versus the Warriors in that first round. And after last night, I'm like, you know what? Maybe we should be hoping for Russ versus Harden in the first round, because I feel like that's more of a level playing field and could be a lot more fun.
I hate it when I have to agree with you, but I do have to agree with you. That would be a much better series, wouldn't it?
And they play Sunday, and that'll be a great game.
Yeah, you know, one other thing on defending Westbrook is that Golden State, they're an elite defense. This is a team that understands who you can leave. They know tendencies inside and out. They're not going to stick to shooters who don't require being stuck to, right? I mean, these are guys who have been through this for multiple years. there's just too many weak links on that Oklahoma City perimeter where they're able to send extra help and shade extra guys towards Westbrook so that they can contest his shots. I mean, it's almost not a fair fight. You know, I mean, Westbrook, in some cases, if you're trying to run pick and roll all the time and you don't have a fully spread court, Golden State's going to be able to really force you into tough shots and force you into settling in situations you don't want to be in. So, you know, I look forward to the next version of the Thunder once they kind of fine-tune this mix and find some guys who can really help Westbrook, you know, reach his full potential offensively, because they still haven't quite got that with their personnel. In terms of who I think Golden State should want to play, I mean, I think the easiest team would be Denver. I just think that they wouldn't be ready. But if they're not going to make it, I think you can make a strong argument if you're Golden State, you'd rather just play the Thunder because they're this known quantity than trying to play this Blazers team that's coming together with some momentum, that you haven't really played Nurkic because, you know, he wasn't on the team earlier in the season. It might actually be an easier puzzle to get Oklahoma City than it would be Portland. And honestly, the way that we were bagging on Portland, you know, for most of this season, I never thought I would have said that. But I think that's really kind of where we're at right now.
Man, they look good. Lillard is really coming on, and it's been fun to watch. Like we talked about it last week, but I'm just glad that the Blazers are fun again. Can I add one thing on Westbrook?
Always.
So, mea culpa here for me. On the last pod, I said Russ ran off Kevin Durant, and that's just straight up wrong.
I've been trying to tell you this. That's why, I mean, I even went into my Instagram comments to confront you with this argument from the Oklahoma City fans, because they're very angry.
Yeah, that was incorrect. Those are the wrong words, and I finished the pod. It was late in the pod, and I was just kind of like checked out and ready to watch college basketball, but I finished the pod and was like, nah, I don't agree with myself. So I think Russ was obviously willing to play with KD for life and was cool with him regardless. I think a more accurate way to explain it would be that like Westbrook couldn't really evolve, and eventually I think Durant decided he wanted to try something else. And that was one of like three or four different factors. I do think that that should factor into the way people talk about Russ's MVP candidacy, and it should matter that one of the best players in the league didn't want to play with him. But it's not all on Russ, number one. And I also just don't want to be... I felt gross. I don't want to be an anti-Russ person. Russ is great, and he's probably one of the first people I would point to if I were explaining why the NBA is the best sport. So I don't want to be like a Russ hater.
Okay, well, now that you've taken yourself off of the boil and you've gone down to simmer.
Yeah, I'm simmering.
I'm going to try to heat you back up. Do you think that game last night showed why Westbrook can't be the MVP this year? I mean, if they're not even competitive against a team that, you know, it's the best team in the league, but they're missing one of their main key guys, they're at home, showcase game, and they can't even keep it close, and he has very limited impact on the direction of that game. He's clearly not the best player at his position in that game. I mean, is this the argument against Westbrook's MVP case? Should this disqualify him? Should that performance take him out?
I don't think that performance should take him out, but there were a lot of elements that we saw last night that explain why he's not better than James Harden, LeBron James, and Kawhi Leonard, which is not to say that he's not great. Like, that's an impossible standard, but I'm not putting him in that category.
There you go. We can continue this war with Oklahoma City. That's good.
I'm keeping it kind of measured. I just think people go overboard sometimes with Russ. Like, when people start calling him the best all-around player in basketball and saying that if they could start a franchise with anyone, I think they said that on the TNT broadcast last night, if they could start a franchise with any point guard, it would be Russ. Like, that's kind of an outrageous claim to me. I think I enjoy Russ as the most stubborn player in basketball who's so good that he can make it work on his terms. But if we're talking about a guy to start a team with, like, he's not in my top five.
He would be in my top five, but towards the bottom part of that top five. The one thing that I love about him is just the consistent effort. Like, you know you're going to have...
That's true.
You know what you're getting from him, and it solves a lot of problems if you're trying to start a team completely from scratch, like a franchise, you know, expansion franchise. He would be helpful in that situation. To me, though, we're getting to the point where the separation between Houston and Oklahoma City, though, is pretty stark. You know, I mean, Houston's shooting for high 50s in wins.
Yeah.
You know, Oklahoma City will be lucky to get to 50. That is a big gap. you know, and I'm not really sure the argument at this point for Westbrook overcoming that gap in success team-wide, especially, you know, given, you know, where their respective offenses rank. I don't think triple-doubles is just the answer to that. I don't think that's the obvious, you know, the automatic answer. And I think Harden's kind of solidifying here is my point.
Your point about effort is such a good call with Russ, because that to me has been the most incredible part of his season. Is like when we were 2 months in, I think everybody in the back of their mind was like, all right, well, let's see if he can do this in February and keep it going. And his ability to do it every single night and just not slow down really is like superhuman. And even a couple years ago when KD was hurt and Russ was playing like this, he started to wear down as the season went on and they missed the playoffs and he was just kind of like all over the place. And that just hasn't happened this season, which is amazing. And I think if you're trying to make the argument for Russ over Harden, I think it's less about triple doubles and more about like, what are people going to want to remember about this season 10 years from now? And there, I think the answer is Russ, but I think it doesn't really matter whether he wins the MVP or not. Like, this season is going to be like an NBA urban legend regardless.
Yeah, and to me, I think he is one part of what you remember, but Harden's numbers are off the charts. I think you're going to remember this as being an insane offensive season where, you know, the numbers were just way up. All these 50-point games, huge triple-doubles, not only from Westbrook, but from other people. But ultimately, when I look back, how many regular season things do you ever remember, or do you just remember the finals? You know, like if we're fast-forwarding 10 years, are we really going to focus so much on Westbrook's regular season, or are we going to focus on whatever happens if the Warriors and Cavaliers face for the third straight time? I mean, to me, I think we're probably going to remember the latter.
Totally. Well, that's I think we're going to remember Russ's season regardless, but that was my thought watching that game last night. Was it was like Steph has had a really quiet 5 months where he's been sort of pacing himself, kind of out of rhythm, and he could turn it on down the stretch, and nobody will ever remember that like he was sort of out of sorts in December. Like he could still own this year.
Yeah, I mean, and we're still waiting potentially for his defining moment of his career. I mean, he's won his first title for sure, but like I said, he wasn't necessarily the major driving force of that series. I mean, there's a case where, you know, he puts up 40 in game one and two of the finals, and that's what we remember forever about Steph Curry. And it's weird to think about that, and it goes back to what I was saying, the disconnect between how well he's played and the perception of him as like an all-timer. That still needs to be reconciled, and I expect that to happen most likely here over the next couple months.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about your weekend, man.
Oh, yeah.
Weekend at Staples.
Well, I was ground zero for the latest, greatest controversy, Andrew. I mean, I really was. So
totally.
I was in New York, you know, on my deathbed, but I had specifically timed the trip so I would be back in LA to see this major showdown between the Clippers and the Cavaliers, right? I mean, stars galore, you know, both sides, just championship contenders with all stars just oozing out of their pockets. And I was racing down through LA traffic to get to the game, do this pregame show. And about like 15 seconds before I'm about to go on the pregame show, they give me the news that the Cavaliers are resting all three of their guys, you know, LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love. And immediately I like fainted because I was like, oh God, what am I going to talk about here for the next 10 minutes? But then I started to realize like I'm about to spend the next 3 hours of my life watching James Jones and Paul Pierce go one-on-one and trading buckets in the fourth quarter of crunch time instead of the LeBron versus Chris Paul show. And it basically gave me an aneurysm.
In the upset of all upsets, Lakers-Cavs wound up being a much better game for you.
An insanely better game. Like it was really entertaining, but on this rest issue, we don't need to talk about it for like an hour, but I think we should address it.
Yeah.
I've got some thoughts because I thought Doc Rivers had a pretty good idea. Tell me if you agree. He says on the Saturday night showcase games, because there's not that many of them. I mean, every year it's like 8 or 9 Saturday games on ABC. And clearly, I mean, this is network. You know, this is the big Showtime games. He's saying just give them bracket rest days, right? No games on Friday, no game on Sunday. So you basically eliminate any possible excuse for back-to-backs for guys resting. And that way, in his theory, you know, LeBron would have played on that Saturday because he wouldn't have had to play Sunday against the Lakers. He would have, you know, the Clippers would have played all of their guys. And now we're exposing the stars to as many households as possible. Do you think that's something the NBA should do next year when they have a little bit more wiggle room with the schedule because they're going to start earlier?
Absolutely. You know, I think that is a no-brainer to me. And people might turn off the podcast at this point because the rest is not that interesting, and it's sort of like a trumped up controversy, whatever. And like the debate has already gone on longer than I think a lot of people would like to hear about it. But it is a really interesting problem because like the scheduling is going to be an issue for years now because the NBA sold all of this inventory and is now more lucrative than it's ever been because there are 82 games and there are 5 nights of national TV games a week. Like, I mean, if you go through the schedule, like you've got Monday night on TNT, you've got Wednesday on ESPN, you've got Thursday TNT, Friday ESPN, Saturday on ABC. The Saturday, like that's, Doc is right on. Like that's the one game that you really can't screw around with because that's like old school network TV, which like never happens anymore. And I mean, for me, I'm old and not cool anymore. So like when ESPN was running those Little John commercials for Spurs Warriors and then Clippers Cavs, like I was like, all right, I've got a Saturday night planned out. Like I was really excited. And then for the Warriors to just rest everybody sort of like took the wind out of my sails. And the Cavs, to me, it was even more ridiculous what they did because they easily could have rested those guys against the Lakers.
Yeah. And I mean, they had a reason. It was based on like Kevin Love's timeline. I mean, Ty Lue kind of walked through it. He was also probably doing a solid to Doc Rivers because those guys are like BFFs for life. But one other thought on the resting, though. The people who were complaining the loudest, obviously, was ABC, and I think some of the ESPN people who were at the game were pretty frustrated by it. Obviously, it's hurting their bottom line. But
yeah,
part of the issue with the scheduling is that it's very clear they're trying to cherry-pick a small handful of teams for those Saturday night games, right? The Warriors play, I think, three yes. times. The Clippers play a bunch. The Spurs play a bunch. And the Cavaliers play a bunch. I mean, they're not spreading out the love around the league for those showcase games. And I actually think putting a burden on teams like the Warriors and Cavaliers to just carry every single holiday, whether it's Christmas, Martin Luther King Day, all these Saturday games, a whole bunch of TNT Thursday night games, like eventually those teams are going to have to rest guys at some point, right? Like you're going to run into this Russian roulette scenario. So I actually think going into next year, they should consider giving more teams the opportunity to play in those Saturday night games. I know it's a tough sell. You'd always rather have the Warriors. You'd always rather have LeBron. But for example, this year, Harden, never on Saturday night. Isaiah Thomas, MVP candidate, Isaiah Thomas and the Celtics, never on Saturday night. John Wall and the Wizards, never on Saturday night. Damian Lillard and the Blazers, never on Saturday night. So you're getting into these situations where they're so reliant on a small number of teams to carry these games that it's almost asking too much of those guys. And I'm always of the opinion it's a coach's decision. I will always support the coaches when they want to rest guys no matter what, especially coaches of contending teams, because I truly think, you know, June's the most important time to kind of prepare for. But yeah, I think if you tweak the rest days, like Doc Rivers said, and then you spread out the love just a little bit so that it's not only 7 teams this year who are playing on Saturday, but maybe you can get that number up to 10 or 11 teams next year, you'd be able to avoid some of these situations.
Yeah, that's a really good point on the teams. I mean, even if you broaden it a little bit, there are only like 14 or 15 teams that have stars that they could rest. Like nobody wants to watch the Magic or the Nuggets or like even like good teams. Like the Pacers are not going to really move the needle for ESPN or ABC. So it sort of limits the pool. Like there's a theory that the Cavs did that to send a message to the league to say, look, you have to start scheduling smarter and cut us a break here.
Well, I think both the Warriors and the Cavaliers were feeling like those showcase games weren't taking into account their other schedule conditions, right? Like coming at the end of tough stretches and so forth. I'm not sure it was that malicious from Cleveland because, you know, I guess Kyrie was actually dealing with something physically. I don't know how serious it was. I mean, he did have more than 40 points the very next night, so it couldn't have been that bad. And then also Kevin Love was working his way back from surgery, and you know that's a legitimate situation. So I don't think that was the case. But I also understand, like, if you're Ty Lue, why are you going to run out there, LeBron out there by himself against the Clippers, you know, a pretty solid team, if you don't have Love and you're kind of worried about Kyrie? I mean, you might as well just punt that game, regardless of what TV network it's on. So I'm not going to ascribe those kinds of motivations to Cleveland, but I do think that they're not blind to these schedule issues, right? I mean, they're the ones who want it fixed more than anybody.
So you're very pro-team in this debate.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not kidding when I say that LeBron should rest for 6 weeks every NBA season. Like, I'm dead serious about that. I would be fine with them losing and being the seventh seed in the Eastern Conference if it meant he's healthy for his crazy run in June. And if I was a coach, that's how I would handle it. I know it would be very tough. I mean, assuming that I have LeBron's like backing on this plan, but I would be playing LeBron like 60 games a year.
I also kind of feel like LeBron is just a different conversation because he's spent the last 8 years playing 100 games a year. So he's almost in a different category where, like, and he's also so important to the bottom line for May and June that it totally makes sense to rest him. And not just the team's bottom line, but the NBA's bottom line. Like, their ratings do much, much better when he's involved. So if you're the league, you sort of have to understand that. But I also think it's just kind of funny to me because, like, we're in March where every year there's a bunch of NBA fans, like, smugly dismissing college hoops around this time of year. And, like, I was watching the tournament all weekend and, like, I wanted to switch over to watch Cavs Clippers, but there's not, like, the NBA people don't have much of a leg to stand on when you basically, like, half the league is resting their way through March and the other half is just, like, dog tired. Like, the Celtics and Wizards both are basically like limping through March right now.
Yeah.
So,
or tanking.
The product definitely suffers late in the season.
There's definitely 10 teams tanking pretty hard too, which makes it even harder. You know, one last thing that we should mention, and there's a report that a memo went out from Adam Silver to the owners, basically leaning on them to say, hey, be a part of this resting decision. Don't just like throw games away with your stars. And it kind of sounded like a warning shot, like, hey, we might actually decide to fine you here if you do this. I don't like this turn from Adam Silver. You know, he had a nice niche for himself as the anti-Stern when it came to, you know, having a pretty forward-looking approach to rest and player health and safety. To kind of try to have it both ways, which seems like what he was trying to do, you know, trying to basically guilt trip these owners into playing their guys on the big games. I'm not sure that's an effective long-term approach. I think that they need to continue solving this by, you know, beating out the details of the schedule as opposed to trying to, like I said, guilt trip ownership. You know, I don't think that's a workable plan.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, part of me, I'm fascinated by Silver's stance on all this and what direction he'll take it. Because I remember, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that David Stern, I think, straight up suspended Greg Popovich for a game for resting all of the Spurs guys.
It was a $250,000 fine, and I was so mad about that. Like, I go back and read my rant about that action regularly, and like, it was inexcusable. I mean, I thought Stern was way out of line in terms of not having a precedent, not really having a good leg to stand on.
Yeah. You know what? So my take at the time was basically that Greg Popovich, that whole incident is everything people love about Greg Popovich and everything that people will remember him for and everything that people love and or hate about David Stern and what he'll be remembered for. It was both of them at their best. And I understood both sides of the issue. And look, Silver, they just got done selling all of these games for like $20 billion or whatever it was. Like, Silver owes it to the partners. He's got to protect their investment.
I know, but this plan of just, oh yeah, I'm going to send out a memo and like warn owners. How do you enforce that? You know, they're just going to come up with fake injuries or whatever other issues.
Well, that to me is what's interesting. It's just Silver's going to have to actually like back this up with some action at some point if he wants to see a measurable difference. And
I don't see that happening.
The other thing is,
I don't think that's actually workable. That's why I think he's kind of gone down this dark alley where there's no real way this is going to play out unless somebody just openly challenges him on the issue and like dares him to find them. You know, I don't see how what he did with the memo is going to produce the result that he wants.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was just posturing to sort of try to appease ESPN and ABC, but
bingo.
I don't know. The one thing this is definitely not going to go away because the season is just too long, but everybody's making so much money that it doesn't make sense to cut it any shorter. And there are a lot of people, like, whenever this happens, everyone says, well, cut, like, 15 games off the season or whatever. But, I that's just not, like, a workable solution.
Yeah, hey, can I take this a completely different direction? Because we've kind of beat this issue to the ground. So, on LeBron, I don't get to see LeBron in person nearly enough, being out here on the West Coast. And most of the time that I've seen him in person recently has been during the playoffs. So to watch him play the Lakers on Sunday was fascinating, because it was a reminder that if you don't have an elite defense that's completely geared with the proper personnel to slow him down, he will make you look like a high schooler. And his command over that game, I mean, even though it was a pretty good game deep into the fourth quarter, but like obviously Cleveland turned it on when they wanted to get the win. But the things he was doing to people in terms of, like, you know, just blowing by Julius Randle with the behind the back move in open transition, bullying a guy like Brandon Ingram going to the basket, you know, from the post, stopping on a dime and sneaking out behind their defense for layups. It was insane, the skill gap between him and everybody else, because that doesn't always come through in the playoffs. I mean, clearly he's the best guy on the court, no question about it. But it was like he was playing one sport and the Lakers were playing a completely different sport. And the Lakers actually had a really good game for them. I mean, Russell went crazy. Best game I've ever seen him play in person. Ingram had a respectable night. They were getting contributions from, you know, a bunch of different guys. But it wasn't even close to a fair fight. I mean, the gap between LeBron and everybody else was jaw-dropping.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's definitely something I've noticed this year, watching him on TV and seeing him in DC a month ago. Like, he is just, I mean, he's been amazing for his entire career, but so much of that, like, he was physically overpowering, and then, like, he was just the best athlete on the court. But now it does kind of feel different, right? Like, he's sort of paces himself through these games and is just kind of toying with everybody the entire time, and is just completely in control in the way that, like, only veterans can be. Like, it kind of reminds me of, like, the latter stages of Dirk's career, where you know what's coming and it's just so much fun to watch him, like, execute.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, it's just sort of like when he decides that he's gonna, you know, make his move, it ends with some just completely jaw-dropping, like, you know, skyscraping dunk over, like, three people, right? Or it just ends in just, it's highlights that very few people could even match in an empty gym. And yet, it's just a flip of a switch for him. And, I mean, the way he was thinking the game ahead of the Lakers was scary. I mean, the Lakers' defense is a mess, so we should admit that. But he knew exactly what they were going to do before they did it. He knew their counters before they could even conceive of their counters. And he was getting and just kind of picking and choosing his spots with so much.
I haven't looked at the numbers. Is he a better three-point shooter this year? Because it feels like he, like, feels like every fourth quarter I watch from the Cavs, he's hitting threes at a pretty surprising rate.
Yes, he. I'm looking at it right now. Right now, he's a 38.5% three-point shooter. That's way up from last year when he was pretty cold all of last year. He definitely trusts his shot more. He's stepping into more off the dribble in rhythm threes. The Lakers were kind of conceding three-pointers to him early in that game. He was happily taking them, which is always a sign of confidence. But they also, one of the more underrated things about Cleveland, I don't think people have completely understood, because everyone's shooting so many threes. Cleveland has gone all in on the three-pointers this year, and they're able to put out lineups where when he plays the center for them, they've got five legitimate three-point shooters on the court. Like, if they take Tristan off, pretty much every single one of their lineups can be five shooters. And when LeBron's playmaking out of those lineups, it is very, very, very difficult to guard all of those guys, especially because they've got, you know, pretty good chemistry with their passing around the perimeter in terms of, you know, just making the extra pass and swinging it. They're very dangerous. And, you know, a lot of people were laughing, like, oh, I can't believe the Lakers are, like, pushing this team. You know, they're going to take their eye off the ball and lose this game. It'd be unforgivable. I still think Cleveland's ceiling offensively is so much higher than everybody else's in the Eastern Conference. And I'm not sure there's another team in the East that, number one, has a matchup for LeBron, but number two can really go and lock down all of their shooters simultaneously. You know, I think we're kind of in a situation. I came away from that game thinking, like, Cleveland is light years ahead, to borrow a phrase, of the second tier teams in the East.
Yeah, I mean, they might be. I think they're, if they're all healthy, and like my question with those guys is whether they will be at 100% in May, like whether it's Kyrie, whether it's Kevin Love, whether it's some of the, because most of the other pieces that they have are older, whether like Channing Frye, Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith is still sort of shaking some of the rust off. Like, but if those guys are 100%, I mean, the rest of the East is completely screwed. Get me out of here. And they can push the Warriors.
Yeah, let me hit you with this stat. Of the Warriors or the Cavaliers, who makes more threes, who attempts more threes, and who shoots a better percentage?
Cavs. I mean, I remember they were better. Yeah, they did it last year's playoffs too, and everybody was like, whoa, when did this happen? They just sort of... Yeah, and with LeBron as the queen on the chessboard, picking everybody apart, it's really, really tough to stop. So it'll be fun to see those guys make another run. Can we finish up here with the Rondo stuff? Did you see any of that?
Oh, I did. Yeah, you know me. I'm already angry about it. Just as soon as you mentioned his name, I'm furious.
I mean, so I'll read you the quote. This is about... The 2008 Ubuntu Celtics are having a title reunion this summer, and
well, they're having a 10-year reunion after 9 years.
Okay, yeah, exactly. I tried to do that. I was like, I don't think it's been 10 years, but yeah. So, and it sort of seems like they're doing this just so that they won't invite Ray Allen. But Rondo went public with this and said, "I asked a couple of the guys. I got a no, a head shake. It is what it is. I don't know a good analogy to put this in. It just wasn't the greatest separation. It wasn't the greatest thing that could have happened to us as a team, a bond. We were at war with those guys. To go with the enemy, that's unheard of in sports. Well, it's not so unheard of. It's damn near common now." There's a good old guy take from Rondo. And then he goes on and on. I only bring this up to say that I loved the Ubuntu Celtics. And longtime listeners know I kind of have a soft spot for Rondo, but this is bullshit. Like, cut it out. Invite Ray Allen, because first of all, it's been 10 years. Second of all, he was critical to that title team, and everybody just needs to get over themselves.
Yeah, if I'm Ray Allen, I just decline the invite once it eventually comes. I mean, it may be 20 years, maybe 30 years, maybe never, but if they ever do come at him, I just stay out of it. I stay above it. I'm not sure why Rondo felt the need to, you know, drive this dagger in the middle of a Bulls season that he's been instrumental in screwing up. We also should mention, those quotes came, by the way, Mark Spears, ESPN.
Yes.
It was a pretty thorough angst from Rondo. Like, I felt like I could feel it in his soul as I was reading that piece. I don't think he's acting on this. I don't think he's playing it up for the media. I think he's just kind of acknowledging it. But wasn't this the same Rondo who was lecturing us about not taking locker room issues public? Like, wasn't that like 2 months ago? He was on Instagram saying how his vets wouldn't do what Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade did. And now he's basically just slandering Ray Allen for the entire world to see and say he's not part of the club. And the hypocrisy here is just overwhelming. Isn't this the same Rondo who supposedly was this amazing locker room leader in Chicago too? It's a joke.
See, I was counting on you. You're always great at pointing out the Rondo hypocrisy, and that's correct. And when you talk about bringing this up in the middle of the season, I think Rondo, like Ubuntu and those Celtics teams, are kind of all Rondo has. Like, everyone else has moved on and into different phases of their careers. Like, Pierce is happy in LA, had a great little run with the Wiz. KG is on TNT. Like, everybody's doing their thing. And Rondo, like, I feel like Rondo and Big Baby are probably still hanging on to that, like, 2009 era. And they should. Like, that was an awesome team. But the Ray Allen thing, the thing people forget is that Ray Allen was, like, the original Marcus Smart. He was involved in every crazy Celtics trade rumor for about 18 months toward the end of that run. And so I don't blame him for turning around and being like, you know what, screw this. I'm going to go sign with another team. Like, at the time, it was totally acceptable for KG and Pierce to feel betrayed by the Miami thing. But at this point, it's like everybody just be an adult.
Yeah, I mean, Rondo is definitely cruising around the high school parking lot, you know, at age 26.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I remember how much hate Ray Allen took. I mean, didn't they call him Benedict Arnold right afterwards? And there was big time slander. But, like, you're a big fan of this phrase, chasing guys off. I mean, didn't Rondo chase Ray Allen off, too? Wasn't that a big part of it?
Oh, that's right. They had their own personal squabbles, too, in addition to all the trade rumors.
Yeah, and by the way, when you're looking at it from Ray Allen's perspective, if you can't go back to Boston because you feel like it's not a situation that can be managed and worked, I wonder where he's going to want to go with the Heat. You know, like, wasn't that sort of a two-team choice? I mean, where else would he have even considered? I mean, I guess maybe the Spurs, but yeah, that's not South Beach. That's not LeBron. At that point, it seemed like a very easy and obvious decision. Like, if you were going to leave Boston, and it seemed like he felt like he had no choice based on the way that things were trending, obviously he was going to go to Miami. I mean, just any vet in that situation, I think just about would have done the same thing, especially one who has...
Yeah, we just got done talking about how amazing LeBron is to play with. So, of course it made sense for Ray Allen. And just, like, from a quality of life standpoint, Miami, like, serious upgrade over Waltham. It definitely makes sense.
Yeah, here's my last point on this. Ray Allen's always going to have the last laugh because he got the extra ring. You know, and not only did he get the extra ring, he had one of the greatest shots in NBA history out of it. So I think he's looking back at Rondo's little party, and, you know, Scott Pollard was on Twitter kind of begging for an invite. We're not going to see that from Ray Allen. You know, what we could
that's
see,
a good point.
What we could see from Ray Allen is, hey guys, maybe we should celebrate the 5-year anniversary of the 2013 Heat next summer. You know what I mean? Like.
It just upsets me, man. I love those Celtics teams, and I don't want them to fight. And I don't. This is a bad look for Ubuntu, and they need to figure it out. But it is what it is. Anyways, good pod. I don't think we have anything else to cover. Do you?
Well, just last point. You know, it's just MacWeldon.com, promo code open. Get yourself a discount. Right. Get yourself some nice sweatpants for the spring season. MacWeldon.com, promo code open. Check out iTunes, 5-star reviews only. I appreciate everyone who's given us a 5-star review and then followed up to let me know that they've done that. You are part of the club. You are invited to our you are invited to the open floor 10-year reunion when we do that.
Totally, totally. Also, send questions for a mailbag later this week, and we will be back Friday.
Andrew, I knew you said some reckless stuff on last week's mailbag because all weekend long, mailbag questions were pouring in from people. So we've already got a stash that's pretty deep, that's pretty good. And if anybody else out there has questions, please send them in. We really appreciate it. Andrew, I'll talk to you later this week.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.